Welcome back to the Below Average Joe's MMA show. Today's episode is simple. It's all things UFC 299, an absolutely amazing night in South Beach, Miami, Florida. We've got a bantamweight championship fight to discuss, a five-round co-main event that definitely didn't need all five rounds, as we all expected. And we have a fantastic rest of the main card and prelims to discuss my biggest takeaways and what I think should come next. And to finish the episode, we have what is assumed to be the final fight announcement for UFC 300. It's a top 15 matchup in the lightweight division. Let's get right into it. Sean O'Malley defends his title at UFC 299. The Sugar Show has successfully defended his bantamweight championship for the first time. He avenges the only loss of his professional career over the course of five rounds. He puts on a striking clinic against Marlon Chito Vera. We're coming off of the best performance of Sean O'Malley's MMA career. Undoubtedly, last night at UFC 299 in Miami, Florida, 20,000 people in the state, in the arena, pardon me, sold out crowd, gate setting records for Florida, gate setting records for the UFC outside of a Conor McGregor card. Sean O'Malley is the biggest active star in the UFC right now. He further solidified it last night over the course of 25 minutes, where he put on a clinic in the striking department. He's never looked cleaner, more precise, more technical, more powerful than he did last night. And that's saying he's never looked more powerful in a fight that he didn't even get a knockout in. He just was landing several impactful shots. Marlon Chito Vera now has 9 losses in his career and has never been finished, has never even been knocked down. You go watch the replay of last night's fight and tell me what Marlon Chito Vera is made of, because he is not human. The knee that Sean O'Malley landed, I forget what round it would have been, the third or fourth round, was unreal. Right to the face of Marlon Vera. Probably broke some sort of bone in there, if I had to imagine. It was brutal, and Marlon Vera just ate it on top of a plethora of other well-thrown strikes, well-placed, well-timed strikes from Sean O'Malley. Landed in a good mixture of body shots as well that I felt made an impact throughout the 25 minutes. Mixed in some leg kicks and put all that together. Those were the ingredients to the first title defense for Sean O'Malley. He is the 135-pound king. And afterwards, he called out Ilya Topuria, the 145-pound champion right now, coming off of a knockout victory against Alexander Volkanovski in February. And do I think that fight would be incredible? Champion versus champion, high-level mixed martial arts? Absolutely. Is that the fight I want to see next? Absolutely not. No, this cannot happen next. Sean, you have people clearly next in line to defend your belt against at bantamweight. And Ilya, you have people to defend your belt against at 145. Should they each get one or two more title defenses and they still remain champions together at the same time, then by all means, we can visit a champion versus champion matchup maybe in 2025. But for now, bantamweight is too good and featherweight is too good to not get these divisions moving in the pieces of the puzzle put together. First and foremost, at bantamweight, Merab Dzhualishvili. No one has won more fights in a row in this division than Merab. No one has a resume in this division like Merab. He is next. He dismantled Henry Cejudo. Before that, he took out Petr Yan, and all of these names en route to racking up probably the most impressive resume that there is out of all, really maybe just in the UFC currently right now, regardless of division. I don't know if there's a guy that has a resume quite like Merab outside of maybe like Israel Adesanya or Volk, guys that were longstanding champions. And not only is Merab the rightful number one contender, he did it the right way by winning 10 or 11 fights in a row now against progressively better competition, numerous ranked fighters. But there are storylines. Are people forgetting all of the storylines that we could have in a promotional buildup to this fight? Number one, Aljamain Sterling was the previous champion before Sean O'Malley. That is Merab's best friend and training partner. That is the whole reason Merab still has not challenged for a title, because he refused to fight Sterling while he was the champion. So you have that part of Merab wanting to avenge his longtime training partner and friend, Aljamain Sterling. As we know, Sean O'Malley knocked out Aljo back in August. So Merab can right the ship for his camp, avenge his good buddy's loss by taking out Sean. That's number one. Number two, which pairs directly in with number one, but I still got to make numerous points. So point two is the Battle of the Jacket, baby. Who wore it better, Sean O'Malley or Merab Dewalishvili? That is the primary story, maybe the best storyline going in mixed martial arts. Who will be the champion? Yeah, that's great and all, but who will get the rightful claim to wear the black and red jacket? And the stylistic matchup between those two is super intriguing. You look at this fight with Sean O'Malley, again, pretty much pitched a shutout against Marlon Vera. Outside of round four, Marlon had a pretty decent success in round four, but even in his best round, Sean still won clear out five straight rounds. So this version of Sean, the best that we've ever seen, pair that with Merab, who is not a striker like Marlon Vera, but is a dangerous grappler who presents an insane pace. Sean proved that he can go 25 minutes with relative ease. He looked very good last night, never really wavered or got tired, kept his precision throughout, kept his timing throughout, kept his power throughout all five rounds. If he can bring that same cardio in with Merab and times it by about 10, that makes for a very intriguing fight. Can Sean keep the fight on the feet like he did against Aljamain Sterling? If he can, you saw what he did to Aljo. Now, Merab is much more aggressive and grapples much differently than that of which Sterling did out of his camp. However, at heart, they are both wrestlers, they are both grapplers, and they are going to try to get Sean O'Malley down. Aljo could not. Can Merab learn from Aljo's mistakes in this fight? You've got to do it if you're the UFC. Sean O'Malley, Merab Dewalishvili, it's a big-time fight. Merab has even been doing his part in trying to build his name and garner more recognizability within the more casual side of the mixed martial arts space. Hardcore fans know how good he is, how much of a threat he is, how much of a nightmare matchup that he is for pretty much anyone in this division. But he's making skits and putting them on social media, being funny, interacting with the fans, saying that he's representing Mexico when he was fighting Henry Cejudo. There were more people from Mexico behind Merab than there were Henry going into their fight. He's doing a good job at building his name, and that's what he needs to go into a fight with Sean O'Malley is, yes, the resume and the win streak, yes, the storylines with Aljo and trying to avenge it, and number three, you are building a more credible name day by day if you're Merab Dewalishvili. Sean, biggest star in the sport right now, put them together. It's a pay-per-view main event. And this main event discussion will be paired with the co-main event discussion. So we'll transition from 135 to 155. Dustin the Diamond Poirier rights the ship. Benoit Saint-Denis was on a 5-fight finishing streak heading into his bout, the biggest of his career, number 3 ranked Dustin the Diamond Poirier, former interim champion, fought Conor McGregor 3 separate times, fought for the undisputed title 2 different times, has fought nothing but the best fighters in the world at 155 for the last 7 years. Yet Benoit entered this fight as a 2-1 favorite. And to be honest, in round number 1, he was looking the part. Maybe not quite a full 2-1, but he was looking like the guy that could potentially get his hand raised in this fight. He was aggressive. His pace was unbelievable. He would not give Dustin Poirier an inch. He had his back throughout the first and beginning of the second round, threatened with submissions. Dustin was able to fend them off, not get submitted like he had been in his prior bouts, like Charles Oliveira and Khabib Nurmagomedov, those championship fights. And Dustin Poirier, forget about a knockout, man. Give this man a guillotine choke. Before he retires, I think it has to be mandatory. Dustin Poirier must get a submission via guillotine. If he does not, he just has to keep fighting, even if he's like 47 years old. But in all seriousness, that was like his lone way of trying to defend takedowns, was to jump the ghillie. It happened at least 3 or 4 times in the 8 minutes, or no, not even, the 7 minutes and 32 seconds that we got. But in round number 2, around the 2-minute end point, Dustin was able to fend off a takedown, separate on the cage, and credit to my buddy Jordan. He said this last night. No one's better with their back against the fence than Dustin Poirier. He can pull off shots with little to no space the way in which his boxing is in that range. It's so tight and precise and powerful. It is beautiful to watch the boxing skills of Dustin Poirier, especially in close range engagements. And that is what led to him getting the knockout blow, putting Benoit St. Denis down and following it with a brutal right hand before the referee could jump in and stop the fight. Dustin Poirier is back in the win column. He had a big time moment to defend his spot in the top 5 to, you know, fend off the new wave, a very similar stature to that of which Justin Gaethje versus Rafael Fiziev. Now, Gaethje didn't do it in as convincing fashion, but the point remains the same. A lot of people complain about how the top 5 at lightweight is the same guys for the past X amount of years. Well, if you can't beat them, the top 5 is going to stay the same. And so what do we see still? Justin Gaethje and Dustin Poirier, Charles Oliveira. He's next up, by the way, because he's got to fend off against Arman Tsarukyan. They are all still in the top 5, but it's not like they haven't earned their right to stay there because they're getting the victories they need to hold their spot. Now, what can be next for Dustin Poirier, I think, is a fascinating question. Ali Abdelaziz, the manager of Islam Makhachev, and funny enough, of Justin Gaethje, tweeted and said Dustin Poirier versus Islam in the summer for the lightweight championship. Odd he wouldn't want his own guy and Justin Gaethje to fight for the title there with Islam. But that point aside, I don't know if Dustin should be thrown in immediately next for the lightweight title. I think we just need to see what happens with the division. It's not like this fight happened that much sooner than the other two monumental fights, because it's literally in 1 month we will get Charles Oliveira versus Arman Tsarukyan. Whoever wins that would have a rematch set up with Islam. That's a storyline in itself. You don't even need to root for one guy or the other if you're Islam. Either way, you've got a built-in rematch. And then the other option on the very same night, this is UFC 300, of course, is Max Holloway and Justin Gaethje for the BMF belt. If Justin Gaethje wins, he 100% should be next for the title. And if Max Holloway wins, all of a sudden the former featherweight champion of the world has a rightful claim to get a lightweight title shot. So pump the brakes. We can't go matchmaking immediately right now for Islam Makhachev. We got to wait one more month. We see UFC 300 play itself out, and then we can start maneuvering the pieces. But that aside, a massive win for Dustin Poirier at 35 years old to maintain his spot, to keep himself amongst the biggest names and recognizable stars in mixed martial arts right now. The diamond shines bright. He puts away Benoit St. Denis. Now he gets to just wait and see what could be next. Can he achieve his goal of becoming undisputed champion and getting a guillotine submission before he hangs up the gloves? And now that we are done discussing the UFC 299 main event and co-main event, we hop into the rest of the card. It was stacked top to bottom. We know this, but who got the biggest victories and what is next for those winners? We start with the Bellator 19 fight veteran debuting in the UFC for the first time, putting on a memorable performance, and most importantly, getting a dub. At 36 years of age, Michael Venom Page finally made his way to the UFC octagon. Better late than never is the catchphrase, and he gets a unanimous decision victory over Kevin Holland. Honestly, He pitched a shutout. He made Kevin Holland look silly at times, made Kevin Holland look lost in the octagon. Kevin couldn't reach Venom Page, couldn't land big shots. When Kevin had his biggest moment of getting to Michael's back, he fought his way back up to the feet. Michael Page turned back the clock a little bit. I know he's been winning a lot. He's won 8 of his last 9 fights. But man, it was just a very, very good performance. Very clean, polished, technical, but enough action to keep you invested. I thought this was a great debut for Michael Venom Page. Everything happened except for a finish. And you can't just hope for everyone that comes into the UFC to have a 1-minute knockout like Michael Chandler did. So if you're going to debut, this is a great way to do it. And he does it against a big name in Big Mouth Kevin Holland. And being that he is 36, he's going to crack the top 15, probably around the number 12 or 13 spot come Tuesday morning. The UFC knows they don't have a ton of time, much like Michael Chandler. I know Chandler came in a little bit younger than Michael Page, but the point remains the same. Not here for a long time, here for a good time. Michael Page, probably, if he has realistic hopes of reaching the title, and I'm not saying he can't. For all I know, he very much could. But if he does get there, it won't take some crazy 5 or 6 fight win streak. It probably would be more like 3 to 4. And the first win of that streak is already cemented. This win over Kevin Holland at UFC 299. And what should come next? I think it's a fight that myself and a whole lot of other people in the MMA community want to see. Number 8 ranked Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, the battle of karate specialists. They literally fight the exact same. Michael Venom Page's stance, had to get all the words out there, was almost identical to that of which Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Light on the feet, bouncing, hands down, very wide base with their legs. That is the fight to make, whether it's a 5-round fight night main event or a featured bout on a UFC pay-per-view, which I lean more toward that would be the case. Absolutely sign me up 10 days out of 10. That's a marvelous, high-level, technical striking showcase. We stay in the same division as the number 11-ranked Jack Della Maddalena has extended his win streak to 17 victories in a row. He knocks out the number 4-ranked former title challenger Gilbert Burns with 1 minute and 17 seconds left in the fight, in a fight that on the scorecards officially that got released, Gilbert Burns was on his way to winning. This was a dogfight throughout the 18, or I can't even get my math right, through the 12 minutes and change that we got to see it. Gilbert was able to land takedowns, also land successful strikes on the feet. Jack showcased his amazing boxing skills that we all knew that he had in the winning method. The winning combination sequence, I finally got to the word I wanted, was with a beautiful knee right up the middle as Gilbert went in for a takedown that led to the beginning of the end. Jack followed it up with ground and pound strikes en route to getting the stoppage and what was probably a few seconds late, but the stoppage did come, and this is a massive win for Jack Della Maddalena. He's going to go from number 11 into the top 5 of the deep welterweight waters. He debuted just over 2 years ago in January of 2022, and he's already 7-0 with now 2 top 15 ranked victories, maybe even 3. I can't remember if Randy Brown was ranked or not when they fought last February, but nevertheless, victories over Randy Brown, Kevin Holland, and now Gilbert Burns. And what does Jack go do? He calls out the man that nobody else will call out, Shavkat Rakhmonov, the undefeated phenom. So Jack did the matchmaking for me. I'm just going to sit back because sign me up. Sign me up. Connor McGregor, what did you say?
Sign me up.
You have to do this fight. Here's the simple fact of the matter. 1, Bilal Muhammad, please give the guy his title shot. 2, nobody wants to fight Shavkat Rakhmonov. And Jack Della Maddalena just gave the UFC every reason to book the next fight for both of them, but especially for Rakhmonov, who I'm sure they have a very hard time getting matches made for. Do I lean Rakhmonov in that fight? Of course, he's undefeated. The guy is a true phenom and a future champion. But Jack Della Maddalena has that dog in him. And if he can bring that type of fight to Shavkat, which we saw Jeff Neal bring that type of fight to and have success, it could make for an insane fight with the winner coming out for the next title shot after Bilal and Leon, assuming, settle their business. Pewter Jan has ended the losing streak, and he is back on top. Fight of the night. This should have been the fight of the night. Pewter Jan, Song Yadong, highest level fight on the card, most entertaining fight on the card. If we're talking through and through from bell to bell, this was an incredible fight. This fight right here shows you why bantamweight is probably the best division going in mixed martial arts. The fact that so many people were writing Pewter Jan off is incredible, but I understand it, right? He had lost 4 out of 5, 3 in a row. I know one of those losses was the illegal knee to Aljo, but if you look outside of those, he did lose convincingly in the rematch. He had a very close fight with the current champion, Sean O'Malley, and then lost to Merab Dawalishvili very convincingly. It seemed as if we had seen the ceiling of Pewter Jan. Maybe he wouldn't quite get back with the gold around his waist. He couldn't beat the best of the best. And then what does he do? He turns back the clock. After 1 year off, he comes back and beats the surging 26-year-old Song Yadong, who was coming in off of back-to-back main event victories over Chris Gutierrez and Ricky Simone. This was a y'all must have forgot performance from Pewter Jan. It was incredible for him to cement himself back into the top five as a legitimate threat and title contender at any time. It was just such a phenomenal fight, too. All credit to Song Yadong. At only 26 years old, the amount of experience against high-level competition that he has is second to none. I think Song, by the time he reaches his true prime, 28, 29, 30 years old, he could be right in the mix for the title, if not sooner, the way that he's progressing so quickly. And he's just a freak athlete. But the night belonged to Jan, who is back in the W column, and he seems to have his path set. He wants to fight Marlon Chito Vera next, and then beat him and fight for the title. And I think that is a good path to victory. Chito took a lot of damage, got banged up in that main event with Sean O'Malley, but they are technically on the same timeline. They had training camps and fought on the same night. Therefore, it is relatively easy to make that fight happen. Because you look at the rest of the division, Merab should probably get the next title fight. Corey Sandhagen is recovered from his injury and said that he's ready to go. But he did mention that he would welcome Umar Nurmagomedov to the top five if that is the fight that the UFC wants him to take. So then that kind of leaves, Marlon Vera or Henry Cejudo versus Pewter Jan. Henry said he wasn't going to hang up the gloves after his loss to Merab. I think I'd rather see that fight. Either way, Pewter Jan is so back. I think it's finally time for Curtis Blaydes to fight for a heavyweight championship. He has knocked out Jailton Almeida, who prior to this was 6-0 in the UFC and running through everyone in the heavyweight division. And I'll tell you what, it didn't come easy because in the first round, Curtis Blaydes got taken down 9 times. I literally put the question up on Twitter, is Jailton Almeida about to set the record for all-time takedowns in a UFC fight? And it took 36 seconds of the second round for Curtis Blaydes to say, no, Dominic, he absolutely will not get that record against me. One of the best wrestlers in heavyweight history and currently in the division, Blaydes is back in the win column after his loss to Sergey Pavlovich. He's won 4 of his last 5 fights, and I think it's time. I think you have to put him in for the title. He has earned it, and we don't know what John and Stipe are doing. And if they're just going to keep playing games and holding out, I know John got injured and tore his pec. It's a serious injury. I do understand that. But they seem to only want to fight each other. That is the game that I'm alluding to. So while we wait for that to happen in 2029, do Curtis Blaydes and Tom Aspinall the rematch? It was from July of 2022. We got to see him fight for all of 15 seconds before Tom Aspinall blew his knee out and got injured in a fight that I'm sure was going to be electric for as long as it lasted. Run it back, the rematch, and absolutely do not make it an interim title defense. No, This fight needs to be for the undisputed heavyweight championship of the world. 25-year-old Macy, the future barber, has extended her win streak to 6. She defeated former title challenger and number 4 ranked Caitlin Sermonara, formerly known as Caitlin Chookagian, via unanimous decision in a fight that many expected to be close. It was relatively close. Caitlin Chookagian, now Sermonara, puts up close fights with everyone in this division. She is the ultimate title shot gatekeeper. If you beat her, you're probably next in line for gold or close to it. If you don't beat her, go to the back of the line. Macy Barber did the job. She got the victory over the course of 15 minutes. And at 25 years old, she's now more than likely one victory away from the flyweight title shot. And I say one more victory because some news that dropped. Alexa Grasso and Valentina Shevchenko will be headlining as the Ultimate Fighter Season 32 coaches. The season starts in June, which leads me to believe we will get the trilogy fight for the title in September at Noche UFC in the Spear. And at the end of the month, we have UFC Atlantic City, where we will get the two surging prospects, Manon Fiore and Aaron Blanchfield. Number 2 versus number 3 will be fighting to earn the number 1 contender spot. The winner of that absolutely should not fight anyone else unless it's for the title at that point. They both have earned it, and now they're just having to fight each other because of the trilogy that's going to happen with Valentina and Alexa. Now, what does that mean for Macy Barber? She's going to have to fight one more time. That's just the simple fact of the matter. Who will it be? You know, I just said Aaron and Manon shouldn't have to fight anyone else, the winner of that fight. Unfortunately, since we're probably going to have to wait till September for the championship fight, I could see Macy facing the winner of Blanchfield versus Fiore in what would become another number one contender fight. I think that's the way that it unfortunately could end up playing out. But I would like to see Macy fight the surging stud that is Natalia Silva, who's now number 7, right behind her in the rankings, undefeated in the UFC, dangerous, violent, super well-rounded. I think that would be an incredible matchup. You can't go wrong with either. Just the purist in me that wants to see the division play out the proper way does not want to see the winner of Blanchfield and Manon have to then fight again and potentially put their title shot in danger. But that's just me maybe whining and complaining a little bit too much. The night belonged to Macy Barber at the end of the day. 6-fight win streak, which I believe is the same win streak that Manon and Aaron are both on. Are they all just going to have... Maybe let's just do a triple threat match at the end of the month. I don't know, but Macy Barber at 25 is one step closer to achieving her ultimate dream of becoming a UFC champion. You know what? Right as I segued out of that, I pulled myself right back in. She hinted at going to 135 throughout the week. Do we do it? Does that make the most sense for Macy? As this division plays out, we get the title fight in September. We get the number one contender fight at the end of the month between Aaron and Manon. Does she go up and fight for the title or fight Juliana Pena? We have Kayla Harrison fighting next month. I would imagine if she beats Holly Holm, the UFC's throwing her right in for a title, which is why I think they're maybe waiting to officially confirm Juliana versus Raquel. Maybe they do Raquel versus Kayla if Kayla wins. Juliana Pena, Macy Barber, 135 pounds, book it. Matos Gamrot welcomed Rafael Dos Anjos back down to the 155-pound division and put on a really solid performance en route to another decision victory. That's 3 wins in a row. Jalen Turner, Rafael Fiziev, asterisk on that one. Fiziev hurt his knee. It was going to be an incredibly high-level fight. Unfortunate that we had to see it in that way. And then now, against Rafael Dos Anjos, the biggest win of his career against a former champ. He's 33 years old. He's 24-2. What do we do with Matos Gamrot? He called out Islam Makhachev. It's a great call out, but the fact of the matter is it's not going to happen. He will not get a title shot. He's going to have to at least win one more fight. I would personally love to see it get ran back with him and Fazeev, but that was in September, so not terribly long ago. I think Fazeev like tore his ACL, MCL, all the L's in your knee. He probably won't be ready to come back for a little while still. But if the timelines line up, I would love to see that fight get ran back for a true second go. Let me know what you guys think. I think it's kind of a weird spot. Gamrot's a very, very good fighter. You know what he's going to do, and it still doesn't matter. He's going to implement that game plan. I think he had 11 takedowns against RDA last night. It's a tough one. I don't know what you do with Gamrot. I would pick the Fazeev rematch if it gets healthy on the right timeline. Otherwise, I don't know. Kyler Phillips is back into the top 15 at bantamweight. He put on a great performance. This is going to be probably the performance that gets forgotten or slept on from UFC 299, but I'm here to tell you, go watch this fight. Kyler Phillips looked sharp as ever in his victory over Pedro Munhoz, which makes his win streak 3, Marcelo Rojo, Raoni Barcelos, and now Pedro Munhoz. And don't forget, he also has a victory over Song Yadong. Very close fight, but a win is a win regardless. 28 years old, right in his prime years, 12-2. Kyler Phillips into the rankings. Let's take a quick look here because what a performance that he put on. Who's in that back half? We've got Mario Bautista. Ooh, that's a good fight. Dominic Cruz, Jonathan Martinez, Umar Nurmagomedov, Rob Font. Those are all great names to potentially have as next fights for Kyler Phillips. Oh, man, you can't go wrong with any of them. Pick your poison on that one because those are all great matchups. I'm just here to tell you, Kyler Phillips, if there's a fight to not forget that will get forgotten, it was this one. Hats off to him. Great performance against a tough, ultra-durable, seasoned veteran that's fought everyone, Pedro Munhoz. And then quickly, we'll hit on the rest of the card. Because a card this stacked, you got to give everybody love. Felipe Lenz extends his win streak to 4 with a decision over Ion Cutelaba. Probably going to get a ranked opponent next, and rightfully so. At the end of the day, that's a former PFL champion. Michel Pereira has silently put together a 7-fight win streak. Get this man someone in the top 15 at 185 pounds. Quick glance. Caio Bahalo, Chris Curtis, Anthony Hernandez, Paul Craig, any of those four is a great next matchup for Michel Pereira. The wild man put on a freaking dance routine on his way to the octagon, and this time he doesn't get gassed out anymore. Maybe he has the most elite gas tank in the UFC. Nonetheless, incredible win streak, incredible finish here against Mykal Oleksychuk. He battered him with body kicks, finished it with a sub, all happened in less than a minute. It was 1 minute and 1 second. Close enough. Amazing performance. Even better win streak. The 6'7" taekwondo bronze medalist from Cuba, Robles Despain, knocked out Josh Parisian in 18 seconds. This is the favorite soundbite from UFC 299. John Anik says, at 4 minutes and 54 seconds, so 6 seconds into the fight starting, he says, oh, this fight has already lasted longer than the last 2 fights of Despain's kind of run that he's on. At 6 seconds, he said that. Unbelievable the things that this guy can do. He's wacky, he's long, and he is powerful. He's dangerous for anyone in the heavyweight division, regardless of how clean he may be. All it takes is one shot. 30-year-old at flyweight, Asu Almabayev has won 15 fights in a row, and he's now 2-0 in the UFC with prominent wins, a submission over Ode Osborne, and a dominant decision at UFC 299 against CJ Vergara. He's 19-2. He's got finishes. He can go the full 15. He had a ton of takedowns in this fight, and the way that he was doing them, ooh, they were beautiful the way that he was setting up these takedowns. It was so slick. This guy could be a problem. Top 15, absolutely next for Asu, even though he's 2 fights in to his UFC career. Oh, it'd be so great to see him take on a guy like Tatsuro Taira. But I feel like maybe he runs it with like Tagir Ulanbekov or a David Dvorak next. Top 15, Asu Almabayev. Remember that name. It won't take long for him to surge up these rankings. based on that performance. And starting the night off was Joanne Wood in her retirement fight. These two posters behind me, I got to see her fight two times in person. Unfortunately, she lost both of those, but the story that I have with her at UFC 203 in Cleveland is one for the books. You'll have to dig it up on this podcast. I think Noah and I had a UFC 203 revisited episode at some point. Go listen to that if you can find it, where we talk about that story. But Joanne Wood calls it a career at 38 years old, but she finishes with two victories in a row. And this fight was a dogfight between her and Marina Moroes. And it came down to the third round. It was 1-1. And JoJo landed a spinning back fist that nearly swept Moroes. And she capitalized on it, landed big shots throughout the remainder of the third round. Hats off to JoJo Calderwood, now Joanne Wood from Scotland. Great career. She finishes with a winning record in the UFC. Enjoy retirement, JoJo. And two orders of business to get into really quick as we head out of here today. One, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, one of the greatest fighters of all time and undoubtedly one of the greatest women's fighters of all time, will be inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame this June at International Fight Week. So many title fights, so many title defenses, so many memorable moments for Joanna Champion, one of the most fun fighters in the history of this sport, a true legend of women's mixed martial arts. No one deserves it more than Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And second piece of business, the final fight for UFC 300, Renato Moicano and Jalen Turner, number 9 versus number 13 in the lightweight division. It will be happening on the UFC 300 prelims. The card order is set and it is unreal. We are just a little over 1 month away, so don't go anywhere as we get in to all these weeks leading in, all the fights that are coming, all to be capped off at April 13th, UFC 300 in Las Vegas. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, be sure to follow on your favorite audio listening platforms. Drop a rating as it helps the show grow. Subscribe to the YouTube channel as well and join the community on social media at TheBAJMMA. Have a great week and I'll see you on Friday as we head into UFC Fight Night, Tybura versus Tuivasa.